Hi there, everybody. Welcome to a bonus episode of the Who Goes There podcast. And this time I'm just going to be talking about my 2025 reading. In the past, when I've done sort of a year in books, I've just done a monologue and kind of gone through my Goodreads and talked about everything that I read. But I don't know. Maybe those are a little boring. You'll have to tell me. I decided instead to just focus on my favorites and a couple of different categories. And I thought rather than talking to just myself, I would invite a couple people on. So I sent out a few inquiries. Didn't hit on all of them, but I got a couple people back that I've had on previously. My sister Megan. Hi, Megan.
Hi. Hello, hello.
Thanks for being here. And Mandy Self. Hey there.
Hi.
Yes, this is it's two-thirds of the, I guess it's three-quarters of the crew from our Aliens podcast that we did with Luke Elliott, but yes. You know, he didn't properly honor the movie. Therefore, we didn't invite him back.
Amen.
That's not correct. He did love the movie. And if you want to hear Luke's sort of year in review, he and his co-host James just did their 2025 wrap up on Ink to Film. So you can go check that out. It's a good episode. So since you are both returning guests, we don't have to go through a big intro or anything. But what I would like to do is just have each of you kind of talk about your year in 2025 in more generalities, you know, totals. And if you want to break it down by subcategory or anything like that, you can. So let's go ahead and start with Mandy.
Okay, so I read 35 books last year, which for me is an accomplishment. Since I had my daughter, I've only been maxing at like 24 books a year. So I used to read reliably like 50 plus books, but 35 is an accomplishment. So we're excited. And of those 35, 7 were nonfiction, 14 were science fiction, 13 were fantasy, 1 was an anthology, 4 were rereads, and then oddly, all the rereads were fantasy. 10 were Hugo winners or Nebula winners. And then I did not finish 4 books. So that's where I was at for my year.
Yeah, I'm betting I know the author and series that your rereads were. I'm guessing Garth Nix.
That is one of them. Yes. Okay. And then the other was, me and one of my friends I'm rereading Wheel of Time while she reads for the first time. So, okay. We read The Shadow Rising, but the others were Garth Nix, which I'm rereading because he had 3 books in that series that I still haven't read. And I like to reread them all before I start the new ones. So,
yeah. Well, once your daughter is of the age where you can start reading her your favorite YA stuff, your totals will go way up.
Oh, yeah. It'll be great. Right now we're reading a lot of Goodnight Moon, which I do not include in my Goodreads count. So,
do you have it memorized yet, though?
Right.
No, but I do have Llama Llama Red Pajama memorized. If anyone would like a dramatic reading or recitation, I guess it would be.
Nice.
It was a Very Hungry Caterpillar and Goodnight Moon. I still have them memorized. Mm. And my kids are 18 and 20.
All right. Megan, your year in books.
My year in books, I started 208 books. of those, I DNF'd 26. And so I read a total of 182, and that's mostly audio and ebooks. I did actually physically read a couple of books this year that were like, one of them was a graphic novel. So I was pretty proud of physically reading a couple of books, mostly fantasy and sci-fi. I have one that was just contemporary fiction and one that is literary RPG. And those are different categories for me this year. Mm. One magical realism, and then mysteries. I did a lot of like cozy mysteries, thrillers as well.
Cool. Sometime I got to talk to you about your policy on DNFs. Let's just do it right now. How far do you get into a book before you decide this isn't for me?
I try and make it about 20% of the way through, but if I figure out that it is just incredibly bad, either mm-hmm. the writing or something, you know, like a genre that I really just don't appreciate, like reverse harem or something like that, that mm-hmm. I'm like, no, then I'll stop it really fast. I had a couple of them, like if I get past 50%, I count it as towards my total that I read for the year, mm-hmm. but I still count it as a DNF.
Okay.
So Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of, I got one all the way to like 85%, and it was so gross, I just could not handle reading the rest of it. And one that came highly recommended, and I was so put off by it that I ended it at like 85%. I was, and I looked up the ending because I didn't want to read it anymore.
Okay. Well, I'd rather focus on the positive here, so I won't ask you to reveal those publicly anyway. I'll pick your brain about those later. So,
sure.
Yeah. So I always set out to read my age, which is, it's getting to be a larger number every year, in fact. And this year I managed to far exceed it because I'm not 106 years old. I did finish 106 books. It's a pretty even split between audio and print or ebook. I think I'm slightly higher on the audio side. Of those, I had 8 nonfiction. The rest were all fiction. There were 98 fiction titles. 89 of those were first-time reads, so only a few rereads. And that breakdown in there is like 50 science fiction and 26 fantasy. And obviously, the numbers don't work there, so there are some rereads and some general fiction as well. I did 30 books for the Hugo Awards, for the Hugo's podcast. That includes nominees. So that included all the novellas and all the novels and a couple of the novelettes, I believe. And then I did 15 graphic novels. I tend to use graphic novels for decompressing, to like bust out of a slump, or if I need to kind of decompress after reading something that's kind of depressing or something that's, I just want to let it sit in my brain a little more. Then I tend to kind of ease out of them. And anytime I'm on a plane, I like to read graphic novels as well. So yeah, I think that's it. So let's go ahead and go into, and my, the categories that I'm going to cover here are favorite first-time reads and then favorite rereads. So I'm not going to break down by science fiction or fantasy. And then I'm going to talk about nonfiction and a couple graphic novels as well. So have some recommendations based on what I read last year. I didn't ask either of you what your categories are, but why don't we just start with Mandy, start one of your categories and tell us about them.
So I'll start with favorite nonfiction, I guess, because that's my smallest category. So for nonfiction, I do mostly listen to it. Everything else I pretty much read with my eyes. But nonfiction, I particularly like to listen to people talk about their lives. So I listen to a lot of memoirs of, you know, famous people or religious people, that kind of stuff. But my favorite memoir this year was actually Condoleezza Rice's Extraordinary Ordinary People. So that's about her life up until the Bush presidency. So everything before then. And she talks a lot about growing up in segregated Montgomery. Birmingham. Birmingham, sorry. Segregated Birmingham. And I thought all of that was particularly fascinating. And since she's reading it herself, you know, on the Audible version, you know, you can hear the emotion when she's talking about different things and talking about her parents. I just thought it was really nice. So yeah, out of my nonfiction, 3 were memoirs, 2 were parenting books. one was religious, and then one was the I don't even know what to categorize this as, but it was The Origins of the Wheel of Time, which is like half glossary and half like the life of Robert Jordan. But
that's as fictional as you can get in nonfiction, right?
Yes, it is. I thought, you know, Condoleezza Rice's life was really interesting, growing up a Black woman in a time when it was hard to be both Black and a woman. You know, and how she still like managed to ascend to the tops of government. I just thought it was interesting. I like listening to people whose lives are very different from mine. So kind of giving me different perspectives in the world. So it was really nice. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, let's just keep going in turn until we cover all our lists. That way we don't have to run down an entire list and monologue for a long time. So choose something off any of your subcategories that you want to, Megan, and I will organize them in the show notes.
Okay. Sci-fi was one of mine, and I just chose my top 5 sci-fi novels this year. And and my absolute number one was Dungeon Crawler Carl, which is literary RPG sci-fi fantasy. I mean, it kind of fits in all of those, but I wanted to leave it in the sci-fi category because my fantasy category is too full. And that was my number one, just because it makes me laugh so hard. It's just fabulous. And the, and it was audiobook, and I had heard you have to do the audiobook with it, and I absolutely did. And I got my entire family hooked on it, as well. So just my absolute top favorite book this year and, or last year. And, I only read the first one this year. I'm going to read the entire series.
Okay. Yeah. I've definitely gotten a lot of recommendations from that one from our nephew, Peter, and you mentioned it as well. I think Sam, your son also.
Yeah. Both my kids and my husband has actually gone through all of them. And audiobook is absolutely necessary. Okay. If you need a laugh.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with just start on my favorite first time reads. And one of my favorites, and they're no really no particular order, but one of the ones that I read this year for the first time was No Country for Old Men by Cormac McCarthy. You can kind of tell that it started life as a screenplay, which it did, because the style is pretty minimalist. There's not a lot of extra prose in there. It's a very lean book. It reads really, really quickly. It's not super short, but it feels briefer than it is. And I think it's powerful in the brevity. If you're not familiar with it, there is a film of it, obviously, that won some Oscars. And the sort of inside flap is, the main character stumbles upon the aftermath of a drug deal gone wrong and absconds with the money and then is relentlessly hunted by the complete cipher known as Anton Chigurh. And it's a really good read. Okay, back to Mandy.
So I read a lot of good science fiction books this year, so I will probably have a lot in the science fiction category, and I don't think these are any particular order. So, but I guess my favorite older science fiction book that I read was Doomsday Book by Connie Willis.
Yes.
So I, you know, because of Seth, inspired to read all the Hugo winning books, right? Connie Willis has been something that's been on my list for a long time because I am vaguely acquainted with Connie Willis. We go to the same convention every year that I help at, Bubonicon in Albuquerque. So I talk to her every year and I've never read her books. So I was like, I should read these. It's really funny because I thought all of her books were set in World War II. So I was really confused when I started a Doomsday Book. I was just like, when are they getting to World War II? Like, and that never happens, by the way.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was really good. And I almost don't know how to describe it because it's like the most depressing, hopeful book I've ever read in my life.
100%.
And I think sometimes when we talk about humanity and the indefatigable human spirit, if you will, we talk about optimism and things like, you know, building a new future and all those kinds of things. And yet you have Doomsday Book where it's like sometimes life is dark and horrible and it's about finding hope even when everything is literally hopeless and you will not win.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, the main character is dealing with a situation where every time she thinks she can change the outcome and she cannot. But if she lost that, like, hope, you almost lose what it is to be human, right? And I just thought it was incredibly beautiful book. About time travel. It's a time travel book for those who haven't read it, about a girl who's
part of the Oxford time travel series.
Yeah. So you have a future storyline that takes place in a pandemic, which is not at all relatable.
I read it in 2020.
And then you have a girl who was sent to the past, and she was supposed to be sent to like 1320 or something like that. And instead she gets sent to, I think it's 1348 or something, which is like when the Black Death hits England. So she is living in the midst of, the Black Death and, I don't know. I just think it's really beautiful. And when I went to Bubonicon this year and I told Connie, I read all of her books and then I cried to Connie Willis, mm-hmm. like telling her how beautiful her book was, which, you know,
yeah,
this book came out a long time ago.
Yeah. The crazy thing about that one is that it was written in the mid-90s, and yet in the book, like if you read it during 2020, like I did, you know, the toilet paper rationing and the Americans yeah. objecting to being told to wear masks. It's like, how did she know this?
Yes, it's a.
Is it part of the To Say Nothing of the Dog series?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah. In fact, there's a very brief mention of the main character in To Say Nothing of the Dog.
Okay. Because yeah.
Mr. Dunworthy is there as well.
Yeah, I was like, well, I just like got it like just now because mm-hmm. I've read To Say Nothing of the Dog and then wrote Roswell of hers and loved them. Mm-hmm. I did read a like a Christmas compilation of little books that I was like, yeah. not as mind boggling, you know, life changing as the rest of them. But yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, I have to read Doomsday Book this year.
Yeah, you might want to just immediately read To Say Nothing of the Dog afterwards, too.
right. Yeah, yeah.
Because it is heavy, like it. But it's really life-affirming as well.
Nice.
It is. I don't even know how to describe it to people. I'll be like, this book is really depressing, but it'll make you, like, proud to be human. I don't know. Yeah. Like,
it sounds kind of like, I don't know if you've read Swan Song by Robert McCammon. It's fabulous, as well, and post-apocalyptic. Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
I just feel like there's a
sad too sometimes.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes there's this modern obsession with like everything in the past was dark and gritty and there was no joy, right? The past was grim, dark. And you literally have this scenario where it's like, yes, it is grim and it is dark, but they're still finding little joys and little hopes like throughout it. And just like the very end, you know, and there's this whole thematic thing with like bells throughout the whole book. And it's just,
yes,
it's just like, oh my gosh, it's the handbells. It's the church bells. It's just bells.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
It's a very good book, but it's definitely depressing and it's definitely a Christmas book. So I read it in the middle of the summer, but it takes place at Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. If I ranked all my episodes of my podcast, that my episode on Doomsday Book would be in my top five. I go back and re-listen to it sometimes because I think my guest was so great. So, okay. Megan, another one on yours.
Well, Project Hail Mary, again, audiobook is an absolute must. I have not read The Martian, but it is one of my favorite movies. Okay. I need to read that. But Project Hail Mary was another one that everybody said, audiobook for sure, you've got to read this. Absolutely loved it. Cried. It became a part of me. Laughed, cried. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the movie.
Yeah. That's one I've done on both in print and on audio. And I really loved in the audiobook that the little musical notes were just sort of played on. I don't know if they were rigorously played as different notes. I kind of doubt that Andy Weir actually developed the language. Although I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fabulous.
I also read Project Hail Mary this year.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
But I did not listen to the audiobook. So now you're making me curious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ray Porter does a great job. I will probably check. I have it on Audible, so I will probably listen to that one this year, right before the movie comes out. Okay, I'll go ahead and move on to my next one. I'm just going to keep going down my first time reads. The next one on my list is called Worst Case Scenario, a novel by T.J. Newman. And the inside of the flap is an airliner crashes into a nuclear power plant and bad things happen. But it's kind of done from sort of a hard science fiction standpoint, but it's super readable like a thriller. And so obviously it's bad things happen, but it's really good. I really enjoyed it. So I don't have a lot to say about it, but I recommend it.
Sounds like a bad time, an airplane into a nuclear power plant.
Yeah. It's funny because I think I was talking to our nephew Peter at New Year's Eve, and I was trying to describe it to him, and then I realized I was getting it mixed up with a book that I read in 2024 called Nuclear War, a Scenario, which was much more of a downer, because Shockingly, it does not take very long in a nuclear war for everybody to be dead. So, it's not quite that dour. I just got it mixed up in my mind because both of them deal with nuclear stuff. So
it's funny because I had someone that I asked what their favorite book was recently, and they said Nuclear War, a Scenario. And yeah. I was just like, that's your favorite book? Like,
it was really good. It breaks it down by, you know, like the lead up to launch and then, you know, at 15 seconds post launch, you know, and that kind of stuff. And yeah, like I said, not very long before everything's gone. Okay. Back to you, Mandy.
So once again, good year for science fiction. So going through my top favorite years of the read, I am a sucker for a robot book. I just love robots. I love books about robots. I love robots who think they're human or don't think they're human. So I loved Service Model by Adrian Tchaikovsky. I devoured that book and I had no expectations going into this book. I just knew it was nominated for a bunch of things and that people really liked it. But I'd also heard like it's weird because you're in the robot's mind. And so it goes through these weird loops. I found it incredibly readable. I found it hilarious. I almost died laughing during the whole military section at the end. I was like, oh, yes, this is so true.
Well, and the logical things like the data compression, the librarians.
Oh, my gosh. The librarians killed me. Yeah. It was just like the perfect mix of like a robot who clearly has a desire and like choices that he is making, but like in denial of that. And then like a human, and this human is like a kid, a girl. And it's just, they're trying to find, you know, the answer to like the question of everything. Like, why are we in this scenario? Though really all the robot wants is a new purpose. And everything is just like, it's like, what if bureaucracy went completely amok? Right. Like, and it was just so good. And I just kept like telling my husband, like I know it's a good book when I tell my husband like every detail as it comes up. And he's like, now I can't read this book. And I'm like, I know, but I have to express it to somebody. So
it's by Adrian Tchaikovsky, and he reads the audiobook and does a really wonderful job with the differentiation of the characters. He does a whole bunch of different accents. The sort of dour majordomo of the house, you know, un-Charles confirmed. It's wonderful.
It was just so good. And it was this weird, like bleak picture of the future. And yet it's so funny. And I loved un-Charles as a character. I loved the girl whose name I can't remember at this moment. The wonk. That's right. I just loved it. I love that un-Charles is in like complete denial that she's human. And like you as the reader from like the first time you meet her, you're like, that's a human. Like, it's very obvious.
Yeah, I can't remember if it ever comes out and says that, but that was always the impression that I got.
Yeah, it is confirmed at the end that she is a human, but spoilers. And un-Charles is like,
mind blown.
It's like his little computer mind is blown. Yes. So.
Well, all he wants to do is find another place to be a valet, right?
Yes, he's not a butler. He's a valet. So.
All right, Megan, back to you.
The third one in my sci-fi category is Dark Matter by Blake Crouch, which is a time travel novel as well. And just so well done. It was one that I actually just read. But I heard that the audiobook is very good. It wasn't necessary though. That wasn't one that I did on audio, but I just absolute top tier writing there. In fact, after that one, I was like, oh, Blake Crouch, I'm going to have to read some more of his because I've heard about other ones of his that are really fabulous as well. But that was one, I think it actually came out this last year or maybe 2024, but really fabulous.
I think there's an adaptation of it that came out last year.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible. But yeah, really just amazing. And all of these ones so far that I've done, and I'm really only talking about ones that are brand new reads for me. So
Okay. And then for me, another first time read was The First 15 Lives of Harry August by Claire North. You might correctly infer that it's a time loop movie. And lots of times in time loop fiction, it's a day, right? There's even a really dark one called like 12:01 p.m. That's a short story that's 1 hour. That one's rough. But this one, instead of being a day or so, it's an entire lifetime. And so the memories trickle back as the characters who are loopers reach childhood, you know, and they're like, oh, this is who I am. And so they have a whole system in place. They know of each other and help, you know, they'll send a Harry Potter letter, essentially kind of thing, to their house to say, hey, your 6-year-old daughter has been selected to go to this exclusive boarding school. So to save them the trouble of having to go through primary and secondary school again. But there's also a twist in it that if you're ever not born, then you're never born. You're never reborn. And so if anybody makes any major changes to the timeline, that can result in wars and other things that prevent people being born. And there's a great villain in the book as well. So, yeah. And that was an eye read for me as well. No Country for Old Men was as well.
Is the that one you were just talking about, The First 15 Lives of Harry August, is it a YA novel?
No.
No. Okay.
No, I don't believe so anyway.
I'm not a huge fan of YA, but sorry.
I like some YA. Like the stuff
I was wrote. I was hoping that would be one that I didn't have to buy or to read, because my list is getting very long, even though we've only talked about.
Okay. I have another one that's thematically close to this that's in my rereads. So I'll get to that one. But we're back to Mandy.
So my next book is Some Desperate Glory by Emily Tesh. And you know, I love YA. This book is not YA, but I did hear criticisms of it that people are like, it's too YA-y, which to them I say poo-poo. It is a great book. It did win the Hugo Award, which is why I read it. What I love about this book is it made me think a lot. And I'm not sure this was the result the author intended. I'm not sure, whatever. But this book made me want to go back to school, get a PhD in English, and write a thesis on the use of genocide in science fiction books. What books are saying about the morality and ethics of genocide. Because what I think is particularly interesting about Some Desperate Glory is they destroyed the Earth. And this is not a spoiler. This is like first chapter. Like, the aliens destroyed the Earth. And the end of that book says that was the correct decision to make.
Right.
Killing the majority of humans was a correct decision. That is what the book comes to. And there's a lot of reasons why the book comes to that answer. You know, we happen to be the only predator species in a galaxy of prey species. So we're the only predators. And we're too good at war and a bunch of other stuff. But it is fascinating. It's also a fascinating look at like fascism and cults of personality and deprogramming. And it went a way I did not expect, like 2/3 of the way through the book. I was just like, I don't know what's happening anymore. And I also think this, you know, my favorite book is Ender's Game, which I've talked to, you know, Seth about before. This book is definitely in conversation with Ender's Game. Yeah. But it's like, what if we are the buggers?
Well, yeah. And what if the battle school was a bunch of radicalized group of people?
Right, right. And so, you know, it was just so fascinating. And like, ever since reading it, like, I cannot stop thinking about it. And yes, it does have a YA feel, because the main character is like 17 to 19, somewhere in that range. I think it says exactly what her age is, but I don't remember anymore. And she's in a battle school. And she has to make some coming of age decisions. And there's an alien that she ends up hanging out with who comes off very young, you know, so it definitely has some YA vibes. But the things it's tackling, the questions it's looking at are, I think, maybe even bigger than the book can handle. But I still think it was very good, and it was a very engrossing read. And I did not expect it to end like it ended, or to go the way it went. I think that was... I thought I knew where the book was going, like 50% of the way through. I thought I knew exactly how it was going to end, and then it didn't end that way. So I found that very surprising. Some desperate glory.
Yeah. That was a good one. I liked it as well. Okay, Megan?
Still in sci-fi, but sci-fi fantasy is The Inheritance by Elana Andrews, who is one of my favorite authors, and that's actually a husband and wife combo. Kate Daniels series and Hidden Legacy, I've read everything that they've ever written, and this is a brand new series. And one of the things I love about them is how they create anticipation. Really, even from just the first book, new book in a series. And I'm really hoping that this series sells well because I want to know what happens. So portals have opened up all over the world. And if they don't get them closed in time, monsters come through and create havoc. And so they're going in with teams to shut these portals down. And since the monsters appeared, since the portal started appearing, people have started getting some supernatural abilities. And one gal named Ada is, she can tell what, how valuable minerals are that are inside the portal. So she is supposed to be the most important person on the team. And through some, stuff that happens, she ends up trapped in this portal. And, it's just fabulous. And there's a dog, which I love. And, anyway, it just created all of this, just like, oh, I want more of this, which I have for every single one of their series.
Nice. Okay. We're back to me. I am going to go with another first time read. And that was Antimatter Blues by Edward Ashton. This was the sequel to Mickey 7, which was a book that was a lot of fun. Mickey 17 was a pretty interesting movie. It was a very interesting adaptation of the novel, because it was quite different. But Antimatter Blues it picks up on one particular thread that was left over at the end of the first novel. And it really develops the creepers. The creepers are the aliens, or the indigenous aliens. Really, the humans are the aliens. But really, really enjoyable book. So I almost put on here, what was it called? The Fourth Consort by Edward Ashton, which was a new book that he put out in 2025, I believe, which was also excellent. Really, he's a fun writer. And he was nice enough to come on Take Me to Reader and do an interview with us. So
that's fun.
All right. Back to you, Mandy.
Normally, I'd be like, my next category is fantasy. And I think I'm still going to do that. But I just did not find this to be a strong year for fantasy books that I read. That doesn't mean it wasn't a strong year for fantasy. But out of the fantasy books I read, unless they were a reread, I had a weak year for fantasy, which is somewhat surprising because I did finish the Stormlight Archive this year. But I... do not think the ending lived up to the potential of the beginning. So it is what it is. But out of my fantasy books, I'm actually going to pick a novella. And I'm going to pick Even Though I Knew the End by C.L. Polk. It's short. It takes place in 1940s Chicago, but it's like a noir setting. So you have like a PI. And it's magical. She's a magical detective. This is a world where there is like magic and things. And there's this like horrible, like demonic murder that she's trying to solve. It's also got a really nice sapphic love story at the heart of it that kind of drives what the main character is doing and why she's doing it. And I just thought it was really fun and nice. And it was an easy read. So I think it actually did win a Nebula Award for novella, but that's not why I read it. I read it because I like C.L. Polk. Okay. So she also wrote The Midnight Bargain, which I really liked. That was a couple of years ago. So yeah, it was a fun, you know, noir, weird magic murder kind of book.
Okay. Megan, next on your list.
All Systems Red by Marcia Wells. It's the first of the Murderbot Diaries book. And it's just real short, like 144 pages or so. I just found him, the Murderbot, to be so relatable, where he just wants to be left alone and doesn't want to, it just wants to watch his serials or, you know, shows. But he just wants to be left alone. But then, of course, kind of ends up in this found family sort of situation. Just fabulous. I read it and Artificial Condition, and I'm looking forward to reading the rest of them. And our little sister said that I need to watch the show.
Yes.
The show is so good.
I will, one of these days I will get that particular streaming service and watch the show.
I love Murderbot.
Have you ever done any of the audio for Murderbot?
I did for both of those.
Okay. Yeah. I think Kevin Arfrey does a really good job with it. Okay. Back to me. I'm going to go with just one that was a lot of fun. And that is We Are Legion, We Are Bob by Dennis E. Taylor. It's the start of the Bobbyverse series. The main character is a man who, you know, had his brain preserved and I think he's cryogenically frozen. Then his consciousness wakes up and it's in charge of a self-replicating space probe that's tasked with finding habitable worlds. And, you know, since it's self-replicating, he self-replicates and has a whole legion of Bobs. And then they eventually have to name each other different things so it doesn't get confusing. So lots of fun. Okay, back to you, Mandy.
I read like 10 Hugo and Nebula award-winning books this year, and obviously I've already named two as two of my favorite books of the year. Mm-hmm. So this was not my favorite Hugo-winning book, but it was the one that surprised me the most because I did not expect to like it at all. So the fact that I liked it, which would be Starship Troopers by Robert Heinlein.
Yeah, you have not spoken highly of Robert Heinlein before.
No, I have not. You know, when I think of Heinlein, I think of, like, you know, the over-sexualization of women and, like, old men who have, like, two women on either arm. Yeah. Like, you know, kind of Moon is a Harsh Mistress Heinlein, I guess. Yeah. And
that's, I would see that as more Stranger in a Strange Land, but
Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Stranger in a Strange Land.
Yeah.
But I guess this is earlier Heinlein, and I'm not saying it wasn't sexist, but it was sexist in a weirdly progressive way at times. Cause, you know, in like the opening paragraph, it's like, you know, the pilot shoots herself rough. Of course she does. She's a woman, but of course she's a woman. All the best pilots are women. And so you're just like, what? Like, and it's like, cause you know, women handle G forces and stuff better. So of course they're women. And I'm like, well, that is actually true. Like the Mercury 13 study determined that women do make better astronauts. So I don't know where Heinlein was getting this from, but that's correct. And the minor sexism that existed through the book, like the main character is like a teenage boy for a large portion of the book. So I feel like I can forgive a lot of the like, and he's just like, while he's objectifying women, it's just like, aren't women pretty? Right? It's not like overly like salacious, if you will. I don't know what I expected of this book because I'd actually never seen the movie either. So,
it wouldn't have helped you expect anything from the book.
No. But it was like this deep meditation on the military and duty. And I know people make a lot of jokes about Starship Troopers, but I just thought it was a really interesting book. And I did listen to it, which I think helped because I think reading it would have been hard when you're reading what's essentially a lecture on duty. Yes. But I was just surprised. I was, you know, engrossed and thought it was interesting. I was expecting there to be more action than there was, but it was, you know, on the list of Hugo books I read this year, it was on the top half. So, which is, you know, not saying much because I read The Wanderer, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for you, I would recommend Farmer in the Sky. Farmer in the Sky is good, but it's like Boy's Life magazine brought to, you know, like a scouting manual brought to life. It is good. Double Star by Robert Heinlein. You'll read it and you'll be like, wait, is this the same weird libertarian, you know, doofus, you know, with terrible politics or something that I've read in other books? And it's very forward thinking. other than a bunch of the casual sexism.
Sure,
I believe a
sure.
woman is actually slapped to keep her from being hysterical, you know.
It is but, what it is.
But yeah, I really enjoyed that one. Okay. Megan.
My top, this is my fantasy category. And again, these are all books that I have not read before. This is the first time reads. And it's a duology, One Dark Window and Two Twisted Crowns by Rachel Gillig. And, it just has, both of those books, by 60% of the way through the book, I had bought the second one because I knew I was going to need it. One Dark Window, it just has a really unique magic system where they have these cards that are called Providence cards. And but also there has been an infection. And when the infection went through, if you survived it, you ended up with some sort of supernatural power. And that's illegal. So if they found out that Elspeth, who is the main character, if they found out that she had survived it and she had magical powers, you're not allowed to have magic unless it's through these Providence cards. I found the magical system really interesting, and the prose was fabulous, just beautiful descriptions, and really slow burn, romance as part of that. Not really my thing, but, it's kind of my first foray into Gothic fantasy. And it was fabulous. And it was just two books, which I love a really short little series like that. Two or three books. Love that.
Okay. I think I'm going to jump to nonfiction, and I'm curious if Mandy and I have read the same book this year, because my first nonfiction book would be The Bible Says So: What We Get Right and Wrong About Scripture's Most Controversial Issues by Dan McClellan. He has a podcast called Data Over Dogma, and that's his big thing, right? Like, don't tell me what you've learned from your dogmas. Tell me what the data says. And so he goes through a whole bunch of controversial issues in the book. If you've ever seen his YouTube channel, it's very much the same kind of thing. But I really, really enjoyed it. I like his approach to just looking, not reading things into, not reading things out of, just like, here is what the data say. It was very good.
I have not read that one. He's the one who wrote the Brain book, right? Brian McClellan? Is he the one who wrote?
Dan McClellan.
Dan McClellan.
Are you thinking Brian McLaren?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I did read a book one time, not this year, called The Bible Tells Me So. That sounds very similar.
Oh, the Pete Enns one?
Yeah.
And they're very simpatico on some of their approaches to things.
I will have to check it out.
I've read that one as well. Okay, back to you, Mandy.
So it's hard to pick anything from my rereads because I only reread books I like. Mm-hmm. But I am going to talk about The Shadow Rising, Wheel of Time, because you guys have been talking a lot about audiobooks. And I did listen to the new audiobook that Rosamund Pike recorded for The Shadow Rising. So she had been doing audiobook recordings for each Wheel of Time book in conjunction with each season of the show as it was coming out. So she has done four recordings. I don't know if we're going to get more. I didn't really like the Eye of the World one. I found that frustrating when she did it, mainly because I was like, I know I can read this 10 times faster than she can. But I had a baby in March, so it was hard to read The Shadow Rising with a baby. So I started listening to her reading of the audiobook, and I just thought she did a really good job with The Shadow Rising. There's a lot of moving parts in that book. There's a lot of characters. She does a really good job with accents and making sure everyone sounds different, which is hard to do. They also did some interesting stuff with editing, with like singing, because there's always a lot of singing in some of these fantasy books. But I love The Shadow Rising. It's one of the best, like universally acknowledged, one of the best Wheel of Time books. It's hard to go wrong with it. I thought the audiobook was very good.
I have the first, the Eye of the World with Rosamund Pike, and I just need to get back to it. I did start listening to it. I was like, wow, she reads very deliberately. But I start at 2x speed and go up from there. So
yeah, I kept going up. Like I was like, okay, we need to go faster. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you have the time to read, I can read very fast. So mm-hmm. It's hard to get an audiobook as fast as I can read without it sounding crazy.
Same.
But when you're feeding a baby at 2 a.m, audiobooks are nice.
Yes. Well, I can't speak from my own experience. So. Okay, go ahead, Megan.
So my second one in fantasy, and it's really more like magical realism, was The House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Klein. And I laughed so hard, just snort laughed in this because the kids say some just crazy things. Linus Baker is a caseworker for the department in charge of magical youth, and that's what it's called. And he ends up having to go and spend a month at this house that where someone is taking care of 6 peculiar children. And I don't want to give anything away, but really just fabulous writing. I have not read the second one. I will read it this year. And that's another one I did on audio. I don't know who the narrator was, but they did a fantastic job.
Excellent. I love T.J. Klune and I love that book. So that's a good one.
Okay. I'm going to stick with nonfiction. I only have a couple of these. So another one that I listened to the audiobook, my wife did as well. And some of our friends did before we went to England. And it's called The Ghost Map, the story of London's most terrifying epidemic and how it changed science, cities, and the modern world by Stephen Johnson. It's about a terrible cholera outbreak that kind of led to the development of what we know now as public health. It's frustrating in parts because the guy's name is Jon Snow, oddly enough, from Game of Thrones, but no relation. But they were fighting against the miasma theory, which of course will never come back in vogue. We'll never have anyone in a position of power who would espouse it. But the idea that something in the water could be causing the cholera outbreak was anathema, right? No, it has to be the bad vapors, just really, really interesting. And like cholera was so terrifying because you could get it and be dead in 12 hours. And all you needed was Gatorade, to get you through it. But they of course didn't have that or just clean water. But we were able when we were in London to actually go to the Broad Street pump, which was this famous place where the outbreak happened. It was really part of the reason that the book was one of my top reads was just because of the connection with our travel this year. Okay. Mandy.
So I'm going to go with my favorite did not finish book, because I intend to finish it one day.
Okay.
But I started reading in October House of Leaves by Mark Z. Danielewski, and it's a horror book. And I had to stop reading because it was stressing me out too much. But I made it a little over 50% of the way through, and I intend to keep reading it. It's also a lot of work. This is not a book you can get on audiobook or Kindle. You have to read it in hard copy because it does a lot of weird stuff with formatting in the book. So it's hard to describe, but the book is about, there's like 3 stories in this book. Like stories within stories. But probably the easiest to describe one, the centered story, is a house that is bigger on the inside, and not in a cool, cute Doctor Who way, but in a creepy, there's suddenly an extra door in your house that leads to a hallway that is not physically possible. And because of that, because the house has like a labyrinth inside of it, the book gets labyrinthine at times. And there was one point where it's like, I'm holding up the book to a mirror to read the text that's backwards, right? Like, so it's an interesting book. I enjoyed reading it. I want to keep reading it, but at about, end of October, I was like, I need to stop. Like, this is just causing more stress in my life in a time when I don't need stress. So I had to take a break. I had to set it down. I'm probably more than 50% of the way through it, because I think I've read all the appendices at this point. So I'm probably actually pretty close to the end, but I was just like, no, these people are stressing me out because they're making dumb decisions and everyone needs to stop. So yeah.
I'm flipping through a Google image search on it, and there's some interesting formatting in it, where a page where there's right side up and upside down and an inset in text, and there's slanted text, and yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird book. And I don't know if it'll stick the landing or not. I know that there's a lot of people who don't like it. And then there's a lot of cult followings for it. Like, there's whole forums dedicated to like solving this book. I like when people play with formatting. And it's like the formatting helps create the feeling of like things aren't right. So I think that it's just very interesting. I just need to, you know, have a non-stressful period in my life where I can sit down with a very large book and finish reading it. So hopefully in the next year, I will finish it, and it will not be did not finish. It will be finished.
Okay. All right. You're up next, mate.
I'm going to go with another fantasy, The Devils by Joe Abercrombie. And I was a little... like, I don't know if I want to read this one because it looked like it was going to be really creepy, and not at all. Completely different from what I thought it was going to be, because the front is a skull with candles in the eyes and, you know, candles coming out. And I just thought it was going to be really creepy. It's not at all. It made me laugh so hard. And then cry at one point and just kind of feel good. And it's all about this guy, Brother Diaz, who's enlisted to accompany this this kid who has been on the streets, but she is the Empress Alexia from the Holy City, and he needs to accompany her to Troy, and they send along with him these characters they call the devils, and they've been in prison for various things. One's a werewolf, one's a vampire. And anyway, it just turned out to be so hilarious. Not at all creepy. The werewolf makes you snort laugh all the way through. Because she just says the most outrageous things. And that was one I listened to on audiobook. And the narrator did such a fabulous job all the way through. It was great. And that was my final read of 2025.
Nice. Okay. I'm going to finish off my nonfiction, thematically similar to my other one. Was Everything is Tuberculosis, The History and Persistence of Our Deadliest Infection by John Green. It's read by the author. I listened to the audiobook. I think I listened to it in a single day while I was doing yard work, because if you have ever seen the book at a bookstore, it's quite small, about novella size. And so the audiobook is only 6 or 7 hours. And so if you're at 2x speed, that's 3 to 3.5 hours. And it's really good. And it's, if you've read anything from John Green, his books are very personal, very affecting. And this is nonfiction, but he weaves it in as a story of the history of tuberculosis and with a personal history of a particular family as well. And it was really good. Really, very, very affecting. Okay, back to you, Mandy.
So YA books, I didn't read as many as I would have liked to this year, and three of them were rereads. So, the new one I read was, of course, Sunrise on the Reaping by Suzanne Collins. So that is one of the prequels to The Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. And it's, the story of the second Quarter Quell. So that's the Haymitch's games, Haymitch being the mentor to our main characters in The Hunger Games. And it was just, you know, heart-destroyingly good. Like, okay. It makes you want to cry. And you know they're not going to win in this book, right? Because you know how it ends. But it's kind of setting up this idea that sometimes revolutions take a long time. Right. Because especially in YA, there can be this idea that it's like, oh, suddenly there's this girl and she's able to make a revolution happen. And it's like revolutions happen, changes in society happen instantaneously overnight. Right. Yeah. But with Sunrise on the Reaping, what she's saying is sometimes it takes 25 years. And, you know, even more than that, because that's just when Haymitch became aware of when things were happening. So And obviously, they didn't have a revolution at the second quarter quell, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you still have to get to the Hunger Games, which is the third quarter quell. Yeah. So, or the second book is the third quarter quell. But I just thought it was really, really good. And, you know, kind of seeing, like, why is Haymitch this, you know, disaffected drunkard, you know, in the Hunger Games. And mm-hmm. you just see how you can go from this young idealist to someone who literally has nothing. But it was really good. So I'm looking forward to the movie. And I do highly recommend it to anyone who is a Hunger Games fan.
I am a Hunger Games fan. I'm not a YA person usually, but I have read all of those. I have not read Sunrise on the Reaping, so I do need to read that.
Probably going to need some tissues. A lot of people I know cried while reading it. So
I definitely will. Blood Over Brighthaven by M.L. Wong is one that I had heard about, and it was absolutely fabulous. It's academia fantasy, which I haven't really gotten into, but I really enjoyed it. And there's a, you know, the main character, Sionia, is, or Sionia, is the a high mage candidate, and there's never been a woman that's made it all the way to being a high mage. And she makes it, and of course the men don't like that at all. Really interesting magic system, and just the writing is amazing. There's a terrible secret, of course, because there's got to be. Anyway, it's one that I had heard about being fantastic, and not every book like that do I go, yes, it was 5 stars. But this one really was.
Nice. Okay, so I'm going to go through some of my favorite rereads. And this one, there's a particular reason that it's on my favorites of the rereads this year. And it was Old Man's War by John Scalzi. I read it a few years ago. I covered it on the podcast. I think it was this day in 2025. Might have been 2024. I don't know. The premise is, you know, 75-year-olds can get new bodies and then go into war. To go into the colonial army or colonial military. It's in conversation with things like Starship Troopers and the Forever War, and to the point that I get mixed up in my head which events happen in which book. But there's a whole series of Old Man's War books, and this year I read all of them. And so this one kind of spun me back off to kind of reset for the series and then read through all of them, and really, really enjoyed them. I haven't liked some of John Scalzi's more recent work, and so I'm delighted to say that I really did enjoy The Shattering Peace, which was the latest in the Old Man's War series. But it all starts with Old Man's War, which is excellent.
I read Old Man's War for the first time this year because I kind of used Starship Troopers as a jumping off point for just
military science fiction in general.
Military science fiction. So I read The Forever War, Starship Troopers, Old Man's War, and Forever Peace this year. Mm. And it's funny because Old Man's War is my new boss's favorite book, but he hadn't read Starship Troopers or The Forever War, nor had he heard of Forever War.
Wow.
And so I made that assigned reading to my boss.
Excellent.
So
I think all three are enriched by the experience of reading all three. Okay. Back to you, Mandy.
My second favorite nonfiction book this year was The Other Gilmore Girl by Kelly Bishop. So that's Kelly Bishop's memoir. That's the woman who played Emily Gilmore in Gilmore Girls. So she plays the grandmother. She has led a fascinating life. She started as a dancer in New York City. She was part of the opening cast for A Chorus Line. And just like her whole life and history and just reading all about it. You know, once again, reading about people's lives who are very different from mine, right? I'm never going to be a dancer in New York City. So
me neither.
Just seeing kind of how her career went and you know, you can think your career is over and then it's just like reinvented. And for her, that basically happens multiple times because when she got a chorus line, right, her dancing career was basically coming to an end because you can't dance forever. Some point you basically age out of dancing. And that's basically the character she played in A Chorus Line is based on her. Like there was this whole, like, you know, the writer of A Chorus Line had this night where he like invited a bunch of people over and they just told all their life stories. And he wrote the play based on their lives. And so I found that to be really interesting and kind of how that just like happened like multiple times for her, basically, where she went from like Broadway to like doing a TV show that's now made her beloved by young fans. Like, you know, so I thought that was very interesting. And I did learn a fun fact, which is Kelly Bishop is not her real name. And she had to change her name because the Screen Actors Guild cannot have people with the same name. Which to me, I made this leap that didn't say this in the book, so I've not verified this, explains why Michael B. Jordan is Michael B. Jordan and not Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan was in Space Jam, so clearly he's already registered with the Screen Actors Guild, right? Mm. So he had to have a different name. He had to be Michael B. Jordan. And it's like, oh, so this is like horses, right? Like you all have to have completely unique names. So I just thought that was interesting. And what's the Screen Actors Guild going to do like 200 years from now? You still can't be named Clark Gable 200 years from now? I have a lot of questions.
That's one of the fun parts about reading nonfiction.
Yes.
Okay, Megan?
I'm going to skip my last fantasy one, and I'm going to go to my miscellaneous category, ones that I didn't read enough of these particular genres to make a whole section of it. So The Wedding People, contemporary fiction, and I had heard amazing things about this, Alison Espetch. And it's about a gal whose marriage ends. Her name is Phoebe, and her marriage ends. She's newly divorced. And so she spends $800 to spend a night at this hotel. She's going to kill herself. She's wearing a green dress, and that's just very important. Anyway, she figures out that she is the only person staying at this hotel that is not part of this wedding party that's there. And the humor is absolutely irreverent and just amazing. All of the side characters, just this crazy side-splitting comic relief. And I had just heard amazing things about this book, and it definitely turned into one of my like top three of, it's like Dungeon Crawler, Carl, Project Hail Mary, The Wedding People. Those were my top three of the year.
Okay. I'm going to go more on my rereads, and I mentioned this one earlier. I didn't mention the title of it, but the book is called Replay by Ken Grimwood. And this is a man who starts, he realizes that his life is repeating. He dies at 38 and then is born again. Not born again. He starts his life again at 18. And so now he has to live those 20 years over. And so it's not his entire life. And throughout the book, actually, the time changes. But while it's similar to the first 15 lives of Harry August, this one's a little more philosophical. There isn't a more traditional structure with an antagonist or anything like that. The antagonist is the time loop, essentially. Because if you're reliving the same life, and then in one of your lives, all of a sudden the moon landing is a year early, or JFK isn't assassinated, you realize there are more people like me. And then you try to find them. And so both books have that in common, but this one I feel like is a little more philosophical just because it has elements of Ecclesiastes from the Bible. Everything is meaningless. You know, he has his hedonistic phase where he's like, well, I am just going to really spread it around in this lifetime, or I'm going to, you know, become a bazillionaire. And you know, finding obviously that those things don't always satisfy, but, it was really interesting. And I like the fact that it's more the character moving in a certain direction rather than, coming up against an antagonist. So it was good. And it's a reread because I read it in junior high or high school. And so coming back to it from when I was a, you know, mid teens to then, you know, somewhat later, was interesting because, you know, my perspective on, wow, hey, you know what, if I could go back to when I was reading that book, would I do it? And what would I do differently in my life? And obviously, like, there are lives where he has children, and then in the next life, if he makes different choices, he doesn't have those children anymore. And I think all of us as parents would be like, nope. So interesting stuff. Okay. I think we're just about getting down to it. So if maybe we can kind of do honorable mentions or bring out your dead kind of thing.
So bring out your dead.
Yeah. That's what they call it on The Incomparable when they do drafts. So yeah, Mandy, if you have a couple more you want to reference, go for it. And make it.
Yeah. Happen. So, Bring Out Your Dead. I really enjoyed all of Connie Willis's time travel books. So To Say Nothing of the Dog, Blackout, and All Clear. I learned a lot about World War II. Yeah, in Blackout and All Clear. And then, of course, on my rereads, I reread the Abhorson trilogy by Garth Nix, which Seth alluded to at the beginning of the episode. Yep. He and I have talked about those on one of his Comfort Reads podcasts. So of this podcast, so you can go see that, but I love those books. But he had recently in the past 10 years published 3 more books in that series that I still just haven't gotten around to reading. So I'm using this reread to now read the newer books that take place in that world. Cause I find as I've gotten older, I don't have time to reread as much as I used to if I want to read new things. So I tend to wait a while for new books to collect before I just sit down and read all of them. It's similar to, I started my year reading The Stormlight Archive, like I said earlier, and other than the first book, none of those were a reread because I read the first book and he said he was writing 4 more. So I just kept buying them as they came out and then waited till it was done so I could read it all. Cause I was like, I don't have time. Those books are tomes. I don't have time. So, the Abhorson trilogy, it's YA, but the first book was YA before like YA was a thing. It came out in the 90s. So I picked it up in a book fair, in middle school, and I still have that same copy.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting when you go back to like some of my favorite books are the Chronicles of Prydain, which are definitely YA, but it's an earlier time. Right. And they are more mature than a lot of current YA.
Yeah. Sabriel is quite mature, I would say. She's like 18, just graduated from her boarding school and has to go save her father. Right. So it's a lot more mature than a lot of YA, but YA is a broad age range, right? It's supposed to appeal to 15-year-olds and then 18-year-olds. So it can be rough.
Yeah,
so I think those are my bring out the dead. I would say it was definitely for me. And once again, this is not a commentary on the books that were published this year, just the books I read. It was a stronger year for science fiction than fantasy. I was just not, I'm a huge fantasy fan, and I was just not overall impressed with the fantasy books I read this year. Whereas the science fiction books, like I already talked about, like blew my mind.
Nice. Okay, Megan, any final picks?
One that I just finished in December, The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches. It kind of has the House on the Cerulean Sea vibe to it, where she's going to take care of 3 very young witches that are living in a house. And again, just fun, poignant, found family, loved it. Last Mom Standing is a zombie one with a gal that's over 50, and I love that because I'm over 50. The Gathering was a vampire mystery horror, but set in a little town, a mythical town, or not mythical, but a town that doesn't exist. It's a fictional town near Talkeetna, Alaska, and since that was only about an hour away or so from where we lived, I always like anything based in Alaska. A mystery, dark for sure, not a happy book, but I just thought it was fabulous. And then my last honorable mention is, it's so hard because it's a book called Death's Nightmare by Amber Danson, and she's written two books, and they apparently did not sell, which if you look at the covers, they were obviously hand done, you know, and so, and the books are really only a few years old, but they didn't sell well enough. And so Death's Nightmare, really fabulous, all about a serial killer. But he is more of a Dexter type guy who he's killing people that deserve to be killed. And the detective that's hunting him, and they become friends, and it was absolutely fabulous. And then the second one is Death's Gamble. I cannot find this book. It had one printing. I cannot find it anywhere. It's out of print. I have looked on every used because I desperately want to read this book. Cannot find it. And so, you know, just that frustrating, this didn't sell well enough, but it was so good. It should have, but you know, she should have paid somebody to make really great covers and done some, you know, some marketing because they were so good. But yeah, anyway, that's my one. I did lots of rereads. Lightning, Seth and I did a podcast for Lightning by Dean Koontz. I read Written in Red, which is the first of the other series by Ann Bishop, one of my favorite series. And my comfort series, when I just, and I usually start this in about October when I can't stand anything new, and I've been teaching for about a month, and I just need like my brain to shut off, is the Misfortune series by Jana De Leon. There are 28 of them. Yes, Brain Cloud. there are 28 of them, and I love them. And I will always recommend them. They will make you pee your pants. So they are that funny, just little cozy mysteries. Absolutely nice. Love them.
Okay. So a couple for me, I was going to mention Lightning as well. We did an episode on that. So people can check that one out if they want to. And then Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. If, you know, I always want to recommend this one. If you've not read it, it's a good read. You know, I find it quite readable given the era that it was published in. There are some allowances you make for earlier, you know, styles, if you're reading Dickens or something, you know, like things were, they don't make them like they used to, but Frankenstein is definitely worth reading. I wanted to mention a couple of graphic novels. Actually, one of them is graphic nonfiction called Elon Musk, American Oligarch by Daryl Cunningham, who I've previously had on the podcast talking about his graphic nonfiction titles. Definitely a good thing to look at, just because one of the things you find out in this book and a couple of his others is that the biggest receivers of welfare in the United States are billionaires, and they are not self-made men. They never are. And and I say men cause it's almost always men, but kind of seeing how Elon Musk got to be the person that he is pretty interesting. And then more fiction ones. I've been really enjoying the DC Absolute series. So Absolute Batman was fantastic. I've also read Martian Manhunter and some other ones, Flash. So I'm hoping to do an episode about those in the future. And a recommendation that I got from my nephew Peter was Transformers Volume 1, Robots in Disguise by Daniel Warren. If you were a kid like me in the 80s and you watched the Transformers series, the art style is exactly what the television series was. But they're much more adult because some of the Decepticons are very mean to squishy little humans.
Squish like grape.
Yes, squish like grape, exactly. So if you want to actually look at everything that I read this year, I'll put a link in the show notes to my StoryGraph and Goodreads accounts. You can go and look at my years in review. I'll get that information from you as well, from Megan and Mandy, if you have it. So, you know, everybody listening to this, let me know, you know, what your favorites were from 2025, and we will see if we can blow up each other's to-be-read lists. So, yeah. So thank you, Megan. Thank you, Mandy.
Thank you, Seth.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, this was a lot of fun. So I hope everybody enjoyed it. Bye now.